We'll call this Planning Commission meeting to order on Wednesday, November 30th. And I will establish a quorum starting from my far left. Go ahead and we'll say your name and your that you are Planning Commissioner. John Thomas, Commissioner.
Douglas Ward, Commissioner.
Renee Schifano, Commissioner.
Justin V. Tannen, Commissioner.
Okay, thank you very much. We have established a quorum. Patty, is that?
Is that going to be recorded good enough for the day meeting? Remember, everyone, when you speak, please reach out, press the blue button, and say your piece. We will now have
the Pledge of Allegiance, and I will ask Linda Maggard to please lead us.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Linda. Moving right along, we are on agenda item number 4. And that is any matters that are not listed on this agenda for tonight to be discussed in agenda item number 11 under other matters. I'll ask now, is there any added agenda items for tonight?
Yes, just one. And that would be the LCDC remand update. And I want to let you know where we are in the process. Land Conservation and Development Commission.
LCDC update.
Right, that's to do with our comp plan tasks, the remaining ones.
Thank you, Deborah. Any others? Hearing no others, we will move to agenda item number 5, and that is public comments for items not on this agenda. At this time, I will ask for public comments for items not on this agenda. Hearing none, we will move to agenda item number 6 on approval of the Planning Commission meeting minutes dated October 19, 2011. I will give the Commission a minute to review those and gather their thoughts. Okay, on item number 8 in last month's October's meeting minutes, there's an update on Little Deschutes Lodge. There were some of us that met over at the Little Deschutes Lodge. We physically walked the property and reviewed the landscaping plan. And I would ask if there's any update, or maybe specifically if in the future from our staff, Deborah McMahon, if we could get a copy of the final plat and then do that review.
And maybe do it on site during daylight hours so that we can walk through the site plan and look give you a good feel for how each condition relates to the land itself. That might be a good thing to do.
Okay, we will table that till sometime in the spring, March, April time frame, when we will have assembled the final plat plan and have a little better daylight hours, and we'll be able to go over there. So let's just table that for now. The other thing that I saw was on page 3, item 10. There's a sentence that states, City Manager Allen stated that the City Council decided that no committee chairs can serve for more than 2 consecutive terms. I reviewed the ordinances and the resolutions that went back to 2007. I cannot find any statement to that effect. And I also read the Planning Commission ordinance establishing the Planning Commission, which had 2 different amendments. 2009, I think 2010 was the final one, and then at that, after reading all that, I couldn't find something to that effect. So I would ask for a reference on that, and if no reference, we might just strike that statement.
Mr. Chairman, the reference, the minutes are correct, because the minutes are a reflection of what was said. So, number one, that was said. So, you, the idea of reviewing minutes isn't to, in other words, it was said, so therefore that's a reflection of minutes, and that's what minutes are. Now, if you want to disagree with what was said, then that's a second debate. We don't wordsmith the minutes. But John, what... it's a good question. The council voted 2 meetings about 2 back. Patty, do you remember? 2 or 3 meetings back on that. The council voted to, as a policy, all boards and committees that the city has, not unique to this one, was it 2 years? And that, the idea was that then we rotate. It's just important to involve more people, get more people. They learn to run a meeting. They learn to, you talk more. You get more into it. And it's really to help nurture leadership. The Deschutes River Conservancy just adopted that a few months ago. They're rotating their chairmen. It's actually pretty common. So anyway, that's it. It's not in our, like you said, it's not in those. It also doesn't forbid it. It's just a policy the council adopted.
Okay, yeah, I think it is a good idea. There was some talk that it was 1 year. I saw in the minutes it says 2 consecutive terms. I think it is a good idea, but the reason I brought it up is because we have elections coming up very soon, and I wanted to make sure that that's clear so we can use that. So we will look to see that, if that is part of an amendment or in the writings or whatever, then the commission will be able to act on that then as soon as our election coming up in January. Then the only other thing, it's the next page 4, it says City Manager Allen stated that he received many complaints about the flea market off Highway 97. City Manager Allen stated that until the city ordinances are operating, there will not be much that can be done in the way of code enforcement. I think that might have been just kind of I don't know if that was correct or if it was or if you meant to say the city community development department is operating, because we have ordinances. That just didn't make sense to me when I said the city ordinances are operating. That wording just didn't make sense. I think so. I think I'd like to see it say that stated that until the city's community development department is operating, there will not be much being done in the way of code enforcement. Something to that effect. Does anybody? Okay, so I had just one other on the third paragraph down, page 4. Chair Thomas said this and said that, and then it said he said he would like to see. I would like that sentence to say he would like to see in next year's fiscal budget, comma, matching grant funds to beautify the city. Did everybody follow me on that sentence? You know, it make more sense. He said he would like to see in next year's fiscal budget matching grant funds to beautify the city, because that word something like this tied it back to the previous sentence, and that wasn't the intent of that. So I probably said that, but I'm sorry, I didn't mean it, and so can you please change it? You get that, Patty? Okay. Now, does anybody else have anything else? Okay. So I would entertain a motion with those following changes that the minutes for October 19th be approved.
I would so make that motion.
I second it.
Okay. Motion made and seconded. On the question, are any comments?
No.
Alrighty then. Minutes with those changes are approved. If nothing further, we will move to agenda item number 7. And we welcome Pat Cleaver to Lapine Brand New City Hall for the historical update. Thank you, Pat.
And Ashley, come back here just so that you believe me. This is just for you. When you talk, it's back here. And it's recording.
I'll have to figure out where I'm going to end up standing until I get comfortable. Well, good evening to all of you. And I hope we have some fun tonight, and I know you're going to learn a lot. And each one of you has different experience when it comes to land use, and you have different experience and knowledge when it comes to preservation. So I encourage you to understand I am here for you. So if you have a question and you're not getting what I'm saying, please interrupt me. I'm one of these speakers that can handle that. So if you stop me, no problem, because I want you to go home tonight and be thinking about all this stuff, and you're not going to be able to do that if I lose you along the way. We could probably spend an entire Saturday talking about some of the things you're going to talk about tonight, so I can certainly come back. But we're going to go through the first six items here in about 5 minutes. And that's where, if I lose you totally on those, these are things you're going to be using throughout your whole time on the Planning Commission. So if I lose you, I'd at least like to get you to have the main concepts there. We're going to spend most of our half hour down here about your comprehensive plan as it relates to historic preservation, about development regulations for historic preservation, and about your future landmark commission. So just to let you know, I was on the planning commission in Washington County, and we sliced it. And I think I learned so much about land use being on the planning commission. I think when you're making decisions and considering things that are before you, there's a different level of awareness and intensity and interest than when you're seeing in the audience. You guys totally figured that out. But ask a lot of questions, you know, your staff and consultants, and do a lot of reading, and you're going to learn a ton. So, when you probably are probably already through a few of you, when I'm hearing here talking about historic preservation, and all of a sudden talking about land use, well, I could just as quickly switch to economic development. Because historic preservation, economic development, and land use, those three things go together all the time. For cities, it can be a big joy for historic preservation because it can be a centerpiece of their identity. It can be the centerpiece of their economic development, that downtown development. It can really be the focus of the design of your town. Think about sisters, because that's more Disneyland. It's not really a building. But, you know, that's the kind of thing we're talking about here. When, you know, right now they're tearing down big malls, shopping malls that they put up just 15 years ago, because where do people want to go again? To the main street, to the downtown. You know, there's never been an historic preservation project in the United States that people went, oh, darn, we're really upset we did that. We've been watching for that for a long time, and it doesn't happen. You hear the opposite a lot. So in Oregon, you know, starting in the early 70s, when we started our planning program, there were over 100,000 people who got up and went to meetings across the state and showed up and had that conversation. And we're benefiting from that wide public involvement still today with our planning. And one of the cornerstones of Oregon planning is transparency in their planning. They want people to have an opportunity to come and meet with the planning commission, meet with the city council, have their input on pretty much everything to do with planning. And in Oregon, we have, back to the 70s, we set up 19 goals for our planning. Now, don't worry about learning all of them, because a lot of them have to do with the coast and the ocean and estuaries, things like that. So unless you're planning on moving there, you probably don't need to study them very much. But some of them are real key. And of these 19 goals, the first one is number one, citizen involvement. And again, everything we do in historic preservation, as well as throughout land use planning, has to be based on citizen involvement to get it right. Anytime you try to move up in super quick before it gets in the paper, it's going to come back. You're going to be dealing with it again, let me tell you. So you want to have as high a public involvement about everything up front. You know, let the feathers fly up front to come up with a really good solution to make most people happy, and we have a pretty solid future. So number one, go online if you haven't gotten it first off already. It's, these goals, surprisingly, are only a page to a page and a half long each. And it's like you wonder, how did they put all of that in a page and a half? But these are the things that they want to know. Number five, goal five, is the one that I spend most of my work on. And that's about natural resources, scenic and historic areas, and open space. It also has things like rock, aggregate, natural resources. Things that have to be affiliated with woodpecker habitat, would be in here, that kind of thing. So back in the 70s, the people and the legislature and the governor decided that these were the goals that we want to base all of the cities and the counties planning programs on. That's why they're important to know these. Then they said, well, that's fine, but what does the local government have to do? So what they said is that we're going to help you, we're going to tell you what to do. We're going to revise statutes. A lot of people just call them ORFs. Those are laws. Think of them as laws, and laws, remember, laws and codes are only made by elected officials. So your state legislature would have written these, and that every time they have a legislative session, you get more. And sometimes they strike out the old ones. So these do change over time, but remember, organized by statutes are right, they are laws, they're from the elected officials. We also have organ administrative roles, and just like it sounds like, it'd be something like if you asked Rick Allen, to interpret, the question you brought up tonight about this, how long a person can serve. Well, the city councilors are elected leaders. They set your policies, so they said they were going to chairmanship, okay? That would be similar to organ advice statute. We're an administrative rule to do like Rick coming up and interpreting it for you, okay? So it's like your people in government and state level would answer, say, Deborah's question or my question, so maybe John would call them and say, what does this mean? How do we implement goal five? How do we implement those goals? They get the same question over and over, so they write it up, the directions. And those are really interesting, and again, surprisingly short, considering the controversial topics they're present. Okay, so now we have all the state stuff going on. How do we get to the local? Well, in Lapine, some of you are new tonight, but some of the others have been grappling with the comprehensive plan. And it's kind of like goals and objectives, isn't it? It's setting out your values and that kind of thing for the city of Lapine. And remember, every city, every county in Oregon has to do this, and everyone is different. Again, public involvement, citizen involvement. Your citizens here, ones at least who show up for meetings or write letters, they have an input, and your comprehensive plan should be different than everybody else's. They're all going to cover kind of the same topics, but they're going to cover them a little differently to reflect the plan. So it's going to have a chapter that has to do with citizen involvement. It's going to have a chapter that has to do with natural resources, scenic and historic areas, and open space. It's going to have a chapter that goes with each of those statewide goals, except for the ocean one. And right now, that's when I kind of joked about the city council meeting a couple of weeks back, that right now your section, when it comes to the historic, it says insert tax stuff here. We are going to insert tax stuff there, but it's not going to be mine. It's going to be your ideas, and it's going to be others who are interested, too. So now you have your city's ideas of how historic preservation is going to work in your city here, and these are more like your policies. Then you get down to this level is your regulations. It's kind of like a building, code kind of thing. It's like, how are you going to do it, the nuts and bolts, it's very specific. And that you want to have very complete. You want to anticipate people's questions. You want to have it really fair, and you want to have it be very consistent with the Secretary of the Interior standards and guidelines. We'll get into that. That's in the packet I gave you. And I'll tell you on that. And then you're going to have to figure out who's going to administer this code, who's going to interpret it and make the decisions on particular cases that come before you. And we are saying that it's going to be, the Pine's going to have a landmarks commission. And so we're going to be setting that up and writing up who that is and how they operate as well. So that's kind of what we're going to talk about tonight. I'm going to stop right there. Did anybody, I lose anybody there? That's crazy. That's like a day's lesson. We just got it. So let's go ahead and look in your packet, because I want you to find a document that's pretty thick. And it says, I think, let's see. And it is thick, it's double-sided. If you guys don't mind, there's some things in there you can recycle right away after you get done with this topic in maybe a month or two. This one you might want to hold on to for a while. It's on literally hundreds of websites. It's very easy to find online. But it's something that I use every day, and I've memorized a lot of it. But it's really cool. So why is that such a big deal? If it came from the federal government, which it did, it's coming out of the Department of the Interior, National Park Service. Why does the Pine care about that? Well, the Pine cares about that because under Oregon Revised Statutes, the state legislature said all historic preservation programs in Oregon, whether they're county or city, have to be based on that thing. It says, all historic preservation programs in Oregon shall be based on the Secretary of the Interior standards, which we're going to have to go over a little bit, and guidelines for rehabilitation. Now, the standards, if you look at them, it's a one page. Again, it's like 10 items, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And if you can read that a couple of times and get it, you can actually almost write the code. Because that's the whole basis of the historic preservation code across the state. And basically, then I have attached to that about the R words, rehabilitate, restore, all of those that actually mean various different things. And then I attached the specific guideline for windows, because that's the one I use the most. And the Landmarks Commission of La Pine will probably use it the most. And you can get a real flavor of what they look like. These guidelines are pretty long. I forget the exact length of them. I'd say about 40 pages. And then they go on and they have expert papers, almost like this old house shows, like how do you clean masonry when you get graffiti on it. They have experts from all over the country who have done it in a way that won't damage the brick and between the painting. And they have papers on what products to use and how to do that. Like say on masonry, like say somebody painted the brick fireplace in your house and you'd like to have a brick color again, there's going to be a paper on how to remove that paint. So those, you know, it goes from very broad to very specific. So like on windows, it's a good example, and you're going to start seeing a pattern when you read these guidelines. And it'll start out and it'll say, well, first of all, you better look really closely. They call it identify. It says look really closely. What, if you're looking at a feature on an old building, what is it that you're seeing? Really look at it, identify. Was it put in the 70s, like 1970s? Was it built in the 1920s? Is it really old? Is it a new model? So you start out with that, and then you go from there to, and it helps you reach a decision. One other thing I want to point out on that, as you do it this week, There's nothing in there that says you shall do this or you shall do that. And that's on purpose. Because there's such a variety of structures, buildings, statues that this applies to, that it's to teach the team that's working on the building how to think about it, but that each project can come up with a unique approach. There's definitely things in historic preservation that are big no-nos. You go, oh my gosh, how did they do that? But, you know, that's it's all based on those. And again, remember, that came out of the state legislature. Then when you get into an Oregon administrative rule, that talks about how we would write a code for the time based on those. Interestingly, Redmond, Bend, and the county's code, they blocked and pasted whole huge sections of it there. And then, you know, there's more common things. And then they have a little thing that says, for other topics that aren't covered here, see that. That's how they did that. Go ahead and look in your packet and find Albany's historic preservation code. It says Article 7, Historic Overlay District. I wanted to have you have something to look at, you know, so you can get an idea what I'm talking about. This is the actual adopted code, adopted through an ordinance procedure, where the Planning Commission in Albany would have held some public hearings, and then they would have put their input into it. And then it went before the city council, again, the decision makers are always elected. And they might have changed a few things at that point, and then they adopted that code. That is what we're talking about. I thought it'd be fun to look at one that, you know, has been in operation for a long time. And so that's an example of an historic preservation code. So unless they were writing one through the planning, that's kind of what we're talking about here. So, Landmarks Commission, we'll just briefly talk about this, and I want to talk more about your code. Landmarks Commissions are almost identical to Planning Commission. They actually, use a term I need to define, but they actually make quasi-judicial land use decisions. And their decisions are important because whatever they decide is going to affect that property owner's project. And if the property owner doesn't like it, within the appeal period, which is usually 12 days or so, they could appeal that to the city council. But all these quasi-judicial land use decisions are based on the code. So the Landmarks Commission, they would get a case, let's just make one up. Let's just say that the Grange Hall, that they wanted to, they have the parking lot on both sides. Say they wanted to expand, and they wanted to double the size of the building, and they applied to the city for permission to do that. They would use the code with both the owners and the staff, and they would go through, and they would read the code and say, does that allow this? If it does allow it, how would we do that correctly? What would the Secretary of the Interior guidelines say about that? How to do it? Then it's not you can or can't, but more how to do it. And then the Landmarks Commission would make a decision. Their decision, they would block and paste every one of the criteria that applied to that application and make the finding. It would say, you know, like if it says the addition can't be taller than the original building, it would actually say, well, the Grange Hall is this many feet tall, and the application is for an addition that's this tall, so you have to be set. Very specific. So that anyone looking over their shoulder would know how they came up to that conclusion. A lot of people think Landmarks Commission is kind of like, oh, we think that, or we feel that, or whatever. They cannot do that with their quasi-judicial land use decision. Okay? So, the Landmarks Commission will have an important role to play. The fun part is in the beginning, it will be more fun than hard work. because they only get to do the hard work when they have an application. And since you only have two designated buildings or properties right now, you're not likely to get an application right away. And so they can have more fun stuff. So that's what I'm talking about. Back here on this Goal 5, in the Oregon Revised Statute and the Oregon Minister Bill, it says that in Oregon, every 5 years, each jurisdiction is supposed to inventory all of its cultural and historic sites. Well, obviously, we did a really good job when we did that a few years back. And anticipating that ruling, we decided to inventory every structure in the Pine Street Annex that was 40 years old. So we knew that you probably weren't going to want to do it again in 5 years. So we actually went down to 40 years so that that inventory will last for a long time. And so they say we all have to inventory all of our building structures, objects, and statues every 5 years. And because, like, say, you guys probably all know the Tower Theater in Bend, when they did their original inventory, it was not 50 years old. So it did not get inventory. So obviously, picking it up on a later inventory would be important. That's the thing we're talking about. It's a moving target. What surprises me is typically we define the word historic across the country as something that's 50 years old or older. Always means. It's not just, you know, that building is historic. It just means simply that it's 50 years old or older. Historic resource or historic landmark has a totally different meaning than historic. But at this point, we're talking about inventory. We inventory every building that we thought was 40 years old or older. That work has been done. Now, what do we do with that? This is really important because you only remember one thing tonight. I want you to remember this. In Oregon, no one can designate an historic landmark without the owner's consent. That's the price. So, as you roll as a leader, you hear someone's worried about, well, Pat, you know, did a file on my property. I'm worried about having to meet that code. He said, oh, well, we just learned about that. First of all, you would have to write that you want your property to be preserved. Number one. And secondly, the code only applies to either properties that are listed on the National Register of Historic Places that are listed by the... You cannot put your property on the National Register unless you sign that you want it on the National Register. You cannot file an application to preserve your property unless you sign that application. So it cannot be done necessarily in Oregon. So everybody knows that in Oregon it's an honor and it's a privilege to do this. So, it's not a bad thing, you know. We have a lot of, I would say 99% of all the people that ask me to help them get designation for their property are going to go for National Register rather than local designation. One, because it comes with a lot of financial incentives, the good ones. And then also because the regulations are identical. So, oddly enough, people worry about the National Register, but the National Register is an honorary program. And just like I gave you those community standards and guidelines, I gave you the whole business there, except, you know, and a lot of it, except for, you know, the individual topic. And you'll see that there's no shallow in that. So it's all. And the reason is because the federal government never comes, they never enforce anything. It's all up to local government. How does that fit in? Well, here, actually, right up in the page and a half long goal 5, it actually refers right to that document that you have right off the bat. And then when you look at Oregon Revised Statutes and Oregon Administrative Rules, it says that even if the city council does not designate a building or an object and it's on the National Register, they still have to protect it. So that's why people have a choice. You want to have the city council designate your property or the National Register. And they said, well, do you think I would qualify for National Register? You know, and if they wouldn't, then maybe local is the way to go. But if they would, most people would do that because you can get a lot of financial incentives for that. Okay. As far as what is being protected in the Pine, there's only two properties that the Board of County Commissioners have previously designated as a local landmark. One is the old cemetery, and it's not the whole cemetery, because it's kind of a new part on the left, and the older part of the land. And so it's just the older part of that cemetery, and that would be, as you would expect, a cultural resource. The other building is the Grange Hall. So right now, in the whole city of La Pine, those are the only two that are protected. The city of La Pine has no buildings on the National Register. Even Sister was a couple. We have to do something about that. So anyway, so that's kind of how the program all fits together. And when it's done really well, historic preservation should be integrated into public works. You can see why economic development, all aspects of government really have it as an opportunity. There to incorporate historic preservation in what we're doing. So I'm going to, we've kind of gone through all those topics really quick, and I'm going to zero in on a few of them. I want to ask the questions right now before I get more specific. Okay.
Two years ago, when you did the historical review for all the properties in La Pine, if you can remember, how many properties did you find on Morrison between 1st and 4th that met the criteria for being a historical building or structure or whatever?
Oh, that's a great question. What I did for that was I was down here 5 days of the week, all day for 3 months. And I tried to either walk or drive every street 3 times. We started with, I had the county assessor print out every property that in his records had a building that was 40 years old or older, and I had that list. And then I just used my expertise in grading buildings through the architectural style as well as building material to come up with that. Morrison is a special street, as you know, in La Pine. And what's kind of fun about it is some of the oldest buildings in La Pine actually came from Oslin. And so even on a commercial street, we have some neat old buildings that are really new. So right off the bat, National Register listings almost always kicks out any building that's been new. Because I gave you the other handout I gave you was on studying. And a lot of people always have a lot of questions about studying. When you move a building, you change its setting, and with only a few circumstances, then that's okay. So let's say that you have some of your oldest buildings, late 19th century, really 20th century buildings that had already been at Oslin and they're on Morrison now. They could qualify for local listing, because they're important to your local history. They're associated with people important in your history, and they're associated with events that are important in your local history. So they're important here, but they might not meet some specific criteria with National Register. So that's okay. So all you're looking for are buildings that are 50 years old or older that retain integrity. When we talk about integrity, we're talking about both the architectural style as well as building components.
I'm going to move the second thing I want to do tonight. No code that I'm aware of in Oregon protects the interior of the building. I've had some people come to me and say, I really think I'd like to have my property on the master register. Gosh, to think about vaulting that ceiling, or we're going to blow out the kitchen wall and open it up to a good room. I guess I can't fly, right? Well, the answer is, of course you're going to fly. Because all of these protections, even at the national level, are for the exterior only, and that would be in your code as well, unless you guys want me to change it. You know, we're just looking at protecting the exterior of the building. So even if the older building on Morrison is a remodel, the only bathroom, countertop, whatever, that doesn't matter.
You have a list of them on the front. Other problems you're on the list.
Yeah, it looks a little familiar. So again, what the Landmarks Commissioners can do, that will be one of their roles, you folks can do, anyone can do, people involved in history, is they can encourage people to think about value of their properties for their community, to educate them that the interiors can be changed and altered, and also educate them that they are always in a better seat when it's never adversarial. Now, I will clarify that, but once a property has a designation, either national register or local, that designation is almost impossible to get off. Okay? And so once that property sells, say the new owner is not too keen on that designation, they can't. You know, it's only for the first, the owner at the time of designation gives the approval. And I assume that through the disclosure law, because it's good people would know about that designation when you buy the property. But just be aware, you know, once it's on, it's on. That's a great question. So back to the Morrison, there's some wonderful buildings there. I have my favorite. There's a couple that really stood out in my mind. But remember, we have a tendency, because we've been to National Park, we've been to Williamsburg, Virginia, places like that, and we think of historic preservation as the building. We really want to honor the historic preservation program and the time, the contribution to the people. You may have a very humble house, a very humble building that really is the best representation of the contributions of the family that was really important to develop at the time. And that can be addressed for reasons of designation as well. Sometimes it can be the workmanship or the craftsmanship. I'm not so sure that would jump out at me in a lot of buildings younger, but that is, if there's something I didn't know that, but we have some really well-known people who are carpenters here. So maybe finding a building that represents their work would be really important. So if John and I have talked previously about this, but one of the things I'm trying to put in the code is incentive. I think it's really important that historic preservation not just be another way of government, another government watching over what you do with your own property. It should be something that you're proud of, and that's a positive experience. And so I'd like to see the fine and the science, which is something really good incentive for preservation as well, because it is a benefit to the whole community. Just a few more questions.
This code will require quite a bit of time. This commission, I think, we have a slow time during the winter on the planning commission. That would be a good time to write these codes. But I'm under the understanding that there's quite a bit of work that has to be done into it. Is that work going to be done? The language in the code, is that going to be done by Deborah and yourself, and then we finalize? The language, put in some of the local flavor to it. I mean, there's the codes is quite extensive, and I we need to know probably as a commission how much time we're going to need to do that, and then we can put in our future agendas that time frame for that.
Okay. Well, it would be a legislative decision, which means that, you know, it's not specific to one property, that it's something that's a policy to the whole city. It's legislative. So it is something you can talk to your family and friends about outside of meetings. It is something that you can discuss. It's quite a judicial to federal piece of this, but when you're doing it, say somebody does want their property to be designated, then that becomes quite judicial because it's specific to a certain property. You know, it may limit or not limit if they can do it in property. So in this case, it's a real legislation, so you can feel comfortable, you can discuss it in any way you want. As far as the timeline, I am really committed to finishing it in December. I'm about a little more than halfway through my first stab at it now. And what I am doing is remembering all the buildings that I saw down here and thinking, okay, if that building is protected and they want to do this, is this code logical for that? And does it give them instruction? And since you may not have a full-time planning staff for a long time, if ever, is this code going to be complete enough that anyone can pick it up and understand it? Can the owner understand it? So that's what I'm trying to do. And then I'm going to be finishing that, and I will meet with Deborah, just the two of us, and we'll double belly kick to death, probably. And then we'll get it in the format so that it matches the other codes and comprehensive plans. And then she will do the paperwork for the Department of Land Conservation Development, let them know we're doing that. And then she and the staff here will set up the public hearing to go forward. And I'm sure they'll work with you on what the best meeting to do that in. And because it doesn't have a deadline, you guys can take as much time and as little time as you think. I'm going to try and, you know, really think of it not only through your point of view, but as the owner. I actually own a house up on the National Register. And I've had to get building permits for plumbing and electrical and different things. So I've gone through the process myself. So kind of coming at it from a couple of viewpoints, and I think that's really beneficial, providing the code. And I also hopefully know all the laws. So, you know, before I end, I want to tell you one story. Historic preservation is never a boring thing. It can be very controversial, it can be very exciting, it can make you cry at times, because it means so much to people. I've had people come up in their elder years and ask me to preserve their house somehow, which means to the National Register or local listing, because they're worried when it's sold that somebody will tear it down and do something awful to it. So it can mean a lot to people. It can be very honorary. You know, there's people very pleased that their history, their families preserved in this kind of way. But there is a very unique story about the poem that I want to share with you. Fortunately, I had copies of all the federal laws in my office, and I actually had read a lot of them, because one day I got a phone call from a lady in the poem, and she said, "Pat, people said you're pretty easy to talk to, and you're not the typical bureaucrat kind of person, and I've got a problem." Okay. All right, lay it on me. She says, "Well, my friend has this issue. Says, actually, it's a skull, and it's in a hat box in her closet, and it's been in there for 20 years. And she'd rather that it not be in there, and we're wondering if you could help us." She had my attention. So we ended up actually trusting enough to have the friend call me. And we set up a transfer of a human skull in the Beaumont parking lot down here. And it really was in a 1960s acrylic hat box that you could see through, and it was all wrapped in boxes of cotton. And I didn't really know how I felt about all that, but I knew it was nice to get it out of her closet. And so I did a little research about it, and right off the bat found out you cannot FedEx human remains. You cannot mail them. You cannot UPS them. So I'm like, great, I'm kind of stuck with a skull here. So I called the lady and interviewed her about where this might have come from, under what circumstances, and through a little bit of work was able to figure out that it was a Chumash Indian woman skull, which is down by Denver Air Force Base in Costa, California. And the story, how she ended up getting it, was her father was a general contractor, and they were putting in a big mobile home park on the hill overlooking this bay down there. And the Indians, the Chumash Indians there, you probably think of Juleton, the Chumash Indian characters. They had gone to the city and said, do not get that building permit because that's a burial ground. And they were born. And everybody said, oh, no, there's nothing going to be wrapped if this thing is yours. So they started excavating, and they started finding human remains all over. And some folks decided that they were just going to not say anything. Well, the skull popped up, and the guy just threw it in his pickup. And he's never known what to do. At least he was ethical enough not to throw it in the dumpster. And they brought that all the way up here now, the second generation has been breeding with it. So I was very glad to finally work on getting an ending to this. So I worked with the elder of the Chumash tribe, and because you can't transport it any other way, I had to, on my own dime, drive all the way down to the ocean and meet with the elder. And at that point, it was kind of strange having that in my car and going down there. But I didn't really know how I felt about it until I met her, and she had like a whole thing set up in the back of her SUV on the leather seat. And it was all kinds of herbs and special fabrics that were handmade. And she came and got it out of my car and put it there. And at that point, I lost it. Probably said it to give me a really nice blessing. So, never let anybody tell you your preservation is boring. Oh my gosh, the things you get into. So, anyway, so did that answer some questions for you? Yeah. You know, as we go further with the code, I know I've heard that you're interested in having potential historic districts. We'll get into that a little bit. In the code, we'll be managing them, so that if you get one, just put this way, as a homeowner, I wouldn't want my property on the national register unless I knew what it meant. You know, what is the code? What are the regulations going to be? That would help me make my decision, right? So the same thing, if you're thinking of a historic district, again, you know, the owners are going to want to know what regulations they have. So we're going to have that in that code right off the bat. And they can decide, of course, it can always be changed too. But anyway, so these things, as they come up in the future, if they do, you know, hopefully the code will be good enough that it will be fine. And already be working. It's going to be a great code. We just need more buildings to protect it. Yeah. But, you know, Deborah and I always be glad to field questions from the public if they have a question about these things. And I'm writing a National Register nomination right now for the Dedham Cabin from Dedham Village, just outside of the city limits. And a lot of people will think, well, isn't that expensive? Yeah, it is. Most people charge between $3,000 and $5,000 to write a national register nomination. The forms are literally designed so the owners can do it themselves. And I have more fun coaching people and sending them questions. Okay, answer this question. I go, then this And if the best foundations are the ones that owners feel, that the federal government actually provides money constantly to consultants that I can't believe it's denomination. So I'm being paid by the defendants of the defense to do this, but they're being paid by the federal government. So don't worry, have people if they're going to do it, tell them that you have to apply for that money, but ahead of time, but it's always there. Norma, did you have a question? You have that look.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks. So there's a lot of little details, but again, in summary, just remember, in Oregon, it's never adversarial with the owner at the time of designation. That does not, these regulations do not cover the interior of the building. And I'd like you to come up with incentives. I've got a few ideas, and we'll talk about that when we're doing incentives.
Yeah, that sounds good. This is very exciting because Lapine is a city now and is doing a lot of different steps to establish its identity in the world and everything. And this historic reservation is critical. I'm very excited about it. And because like you said, that it's about people, that the buildings are just these treasures that tell the stories of the people, and Lapine has a very rich history, and I think that's what we're going to be doing, is we're going to be establishing that history, you know, in the future, and really about those people and their lives, and to me, when I walk on grounds that I knew that were first walked on by some of the first pioneers in Lapine. I mean, it's just exciting to know that you're on that square inch of that ground. You know, it's the same ground. I don't think people realize the importance of the history of the places that and the people that have gone before them. You know, we just take that for granted as we walk on this earth. How many people have been there before? We just think as a society that we're the first ones there, and it's very egotistical to think that we're just going to go there and reinvent the wheel all the time. There's been an enormous amount of work already done, and just to document it, that's just exciting. It was exciting to me just to read, you know, your documentation of the buildings. That's the first step. And now we can, as a local government, we can establish the codes, and it's exciting. People, they're going to be excited, I think. There'll be not a lot, but there'll be a few that are really excited, and with the help in the city and everything, they're in good company. They're not out on a limb doing these things themselves. That they'll have some place to go to ask questions, to get answers, and this is exciting for the fund. Really, thank you.
Pat, how much time should we allocate for December? Do you want to maybe email us a date or two that will work? I think it's only a week until our codes are adopted formally. Okay. Just one meeting in December, aren't we? No. I was planning commission.
This really isn't the time. Let's talk about that under other matters. That way we can move forward because we'll establish our time for that. Let's think about that and let's move forward to the review of the goals for 2011. Now, this was the goals for 2011. Kind of a review. And what it is it's kind of a way to look back and say, okay, the year's passed, 2011. It's going to be December next month. Basically, just how did we do, and you know, and what could we do better maybe for 2012? And does everybody still have one of the copies of this Planning Commission Project Development Goals for 2011-2012 that Deborah gave at a couple of meetings ago? I'll read kind of a few of the things that here that we can talk about.
I need to hear. The three people wouldn't have, and then all we'll do is let's wait for Rick to get back. Will you go ahead and start off with someone else?
I don't know. I'm going to look.
There it is. It says,
one thing we did in 2011, we kind of finalized, if you remember, we finalized the comp plan. We worked on that. We were successful with the LCDC to get, or LDCD, to get the most of the goals. There's only a few outstanding goals, which is very exciting. We're very, very close to having all those things met. We discussed transportation issues that we had formed a transportation plan committee, but then we amended that to read that would be tabled at that time and brought back with the utilities committee. the Public Works Committee that we have we formed it yet? Not really. Oh, it has been established. The members are seated in that. Oh, okay. Well, from the Planning Commission, you're the Planning Commission representative. But I mean, I'm talking about the whole commission. There's five or seven of them, whatever. So that's, you know, that was some good accomplishments. If you remember right, wasn't it 2011 we worked finalizing into the BioGreen issue, siting of that, finished on some of that. So there it was a big year really for the Planning Commission. I think it was as a whole just to kind of bracket it, the whole year, I would say that there was a lot of work that was accomplished. I don't know of any goal that we came short of that we're moving into 2012. When I get my paperwork back, I'll review that again. But I'm excited that we got so much work done, and people don't realize, I think, that how much work the Planning Commission does do. A lot of our work goes directly to the council, and then they get all the credit. No, I'm just kidding. No. But really, the Planning Commission did a lot of that groundwork, and I am very proud to be the chair last year. I want to thank you guys. That was just an awesome year. We really accomplished a great deal, and I really enjoyed it, had a great time, and just want to thank you. Anybody else that was here have any comments? Linda?
Really enjoyed being here also, and you have done a marvelous job of chairing it, and Deborah and James, fabulous.
Deborah, please.
What's most important, and I'm sure it's in the document that's being copied, is that when you think of goals, you want to make sure that you separate that out from a task or an objective. A large goal for anyone would be do good, avoid evil. That's a goal. For a planning commission, it would be, you know, make sure that we're aware of every facet of the land use planning process, because that's important to what you do. A task or an objective might be, we're going to add the historic chapter. That's a task. It's not necessarily a broad-reaching goal. So when you keep those things separate, you're going to have goals that transcend from year to year because they make sense, they're long-term. And then the projects that you accomplish underneath there, those broad headings, tell the public what you've done. And then you can translate that into a report very easily, and then everybody knows what the Planning Commission's accomplished throughout their terms. I hope I said that in here.
Before the meeting, Deborah and I talked about pinning up somewhere where people can come in to City Hall and see Planning Commission goal for 2012. And so next month, during the month of December, we'll be use this kind of as a guideline. But feel free to come up with other goals that you might feel are very relevant for the city in this next year. And what we'll do is we'll end up with a fairly short list of goals for 2012, and we will publish those, and we'll put those out in public notice and saying, these are our goals. That's a public statement saying, this is where the direction we're going to go, and so that all the public can see that. And that's one thing we'll be working on. So think about that till next month, in December meeting, and we will do so. Certainly. Question from Doug? Yeah.
Mr. Allen, BioGreen, what's the status? Correct me if I'm wrong, but if they're not approved by the State Land Use Commission by January 1st to lose the funding, and they go somewhere else. So where are they? Where are we? Do you have any idea?
So as Deborah stated, the Planning Commission goals are these broad topics that you can read. So read through this. Let's work on finalizing our goals for 2012 in our December meeting. And that's all I have. Any other comments about 2011? And I would like to publicly welcome at this time our two new commissioners, Norm McClung and Justin Vitanen. Thank you very much, you two, for being a part of this commission. We look forward to an even better year for 2012, if that's physically possible. Thank you very much. And let's give these two gentlemen a little round of applause. Thank you. Look forward to working with you guys. It's going to be exciting. Just diving right in on our historical codes. That's going to be some neat work. Start thinking in that direction. We will move now to agenda item number 9, and we will strike that in that the elections for 2012, according to our ordinance for the Planning Commission, is to be done in January of 2012. First meeting of the first month, that would be January 2012, we will have elections for the Planning Commission. We will move to agenda item number 10, Planning Commissioner Reports, and that is where each month Planning Commissioners state different meetings they went to within the city and things they've learned within the city to report to the other Planning Commissioners. So at this time, I'd like to open that up. No, I have not. How was everyone's Thanksgiving? Who traveled the farthest? I'll start off with saying that I drove to Mount Angel, Oregon and back in the same day and also ate a meal. No, did not. But the roads were clear. Anyone else travel farther than Mount Angel? Okay, I guess I got that prize. Everyone else stayed here? Anything else happen?
I didn't get to go anywhere.
Well, good.
Wash the dishes.
Well, good for you. You get the prize for washing dishes. I did not wash a single dish. So I'm very proud of that. Thanksgiving. Okay, that concludes the Planning Commission reports. Agenda item number 11 is other matters. And Deborah has an LCDC update.
Yes. I'm going to go back in history a little bit so that You can understand what the LCDC Commission instructed us to do. If you remember, we went and presented our documents to them, and they eventually wrote a report saying, you're good on all these, but we need more work in these areas, and they're very specific areas. Housing, buildable lands inventory, Goal 5, and do more to justify the size of your UGB, which is the toughest task. And at LCDC, we worked with their staff at DLCD, which is the subunit, and we determined that, well, we think we can get everything done by October 31st. Well, that date's come and gone, and I've reported to DLCD that I need more time. What can happen at that point is that DLCD can write a letter to the city saying, you had the October 31st date. We'll have to establish a new date or you'll be out of compliance. And that sounds drastic and you know, very bureaucratic, but by the time I'm done with this work, it will probably be before they ever write a letter to you. So what you'll see next from me is the completion of all the tasks that LCDC asked us to complete. We'll review those just like we did the planning documents for the comp plan. And we'll have a hearing, and we'll forward that to the city council and then submit that back to LCDC. But I want to let you know I've passed the deadline that was originally established and working hard to get the rest complete. So if I have to be spanked, fine. But we're still working on it.
Great. Thank you for your honesty.
You're welcome.
If there's no other matters, what we need to do before we adjourn is discuss the December 21st meeting. And I would entertain a motion that we cancel the 21st meeting in lieu of an email report that will be done by Pat Clewer and Deborah McMahon and updating on the historical landmarks commission work.
Which will result in homework for you. So instead of a meeting, you'll have some reading to do to prep for the January meeting.
Good. So, would someone want to make that motion?
I'll ask the question first. Patty, will you, since I don't have access freely to the email, will you have hard copies available for, like, me to pick up and read?
Yeah, as long as I'm sending a copy.
Would you do that for me, please? Yes.
Sure.
Second. Motion made and seconded. And if there's no further on the question, let's establish the date for January, third Wednesday in January, as our next meeting at this location. Thanks, Deborah. January 18th, well after all the holidays, and we'd expect a full commission then. Next meeting, January 18th at 5:30 p.m. Okay. Kate. Make sure that everybody that has things for the agenda between now and then, please get them to Patty a week prior to the meetings. She needs those agenda items a week prior to the meeting so that we can get them published. Thanks. And at this time, then, I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
I'll second.
Motion made and seconded. No further questions. This meeting is adjourned.